This is Louis Zumbaugh with Rush Hour Ag. Leave your message after the tone.
Hey, Louis, it's Elliot Henderson. Can't wait to tell you about...
On the back roads, you're riding with the dust, talking agriculture policy with people you can trust. From the field to the capital, we're breaking it down. Real talk, real issues from a real farm town. Every hour's rush hour when the work won't leave, so we're cutting through the noise and setting things straight.
What's your rush today, Elliot?
Welcome, everybody, to this week's episode of Rush Hour Ag. I'm your co-host, Louis Zumbaugh.
And I'm your co-host, Elliot Henderson.
Yeah, well, it's good to be back in Slater. We're at the Farm for Profit studio today. We got some great guests, and before we get to them, what's been going on?
I don't know. It's just kind of nice to be back down here in Slater. It just feels like maybe we're getting back on the horse. I feel like I've been getting drugged by it for quite a while, so it's nice to be back down here.
Yeah. I don't mind doing them at home personally. We don't have to have the two-hour drive, but hey, you know.
Yep.
If you like the two-hour drive, that's great.
Yeah, I was just getting back on it again.
I actually... come down from Fort Dodge today. My wife and I went to Fort Dodge for a couple things.
And you guys got done picking the other day, right?
We got done picking on Monday. Yeah. Yep.
Nice.
So we went out with a 240-some bushel field, and we went into that one with a 170-some bushel field. Our yields were all over the place this year.
Yeah, pretty typical.
Yeah. So and you got done the Sunday
Last Saturday morning early. We got done, and then
what time?
It was like 3 o'clock in the morning.
So, like I said, you got done on Sunday.
No, it was Friday.
It was Friday. Oh, yeah. So it was Saturday morning. Yeah, Saturday morning. All right. We're on morning. Okay.
But I think we'll get filled up today at the grain elevator. So we should be pretty much done taking corn in.
Okay. Well, if you quit spilling on the ground, you won't.
Yeah. Well,
he's got a habit of that.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, today we got a couple exciting guests. They are lobbyists at the Iowa State Capitol. Mm-hmm. And you worked for LS2.
Yes.
Was there an LS1?
No.
Good question.
We do get that a lot. Yeah. So LS2, based off of the founding partners, which are Chuck Larson, the L, yep. Karen Slifka, and Joe Shanahan, which are the S2. So LS2 group. Okay. Have to enunciate so that people don't think it's LS2, but it's LS2 group.
LS2. Sure. All right.
So our guests today are Courtney and Brittany. Can you guys introduce yourselves?
Yes, thank you. My name is Brittany Lumley. I am the Managing Director of Government Affairs at LS2 Group. I've been with LS2 now for 8 years this last month, which I can't believe that. A little bit about LS2 Group. We started as a public affairs, public relations firm. And from there, adding clients and things like that, client needs really drove them to expand to include government affairs, which is our work, crisis communications, international relations, event planning. So that's kind of how we started. And we're a bipartisan firm. So we work on both sides of the aisle, and that's same with our lobby team with the government affairs side of things. So there's four lobbyists there that are we're bipartisan. Courtney and I lean one way, and we do have another member that, you know, he represents the Democrat side of things. And we're a multi-client firm. So that means we represent anybody from healthcare, alcohol, education, judicial, energy, things like that. Some ag interests as well, which is really fun. It keeps us on our toes. Prior to joining LS2 Group, I worked at the Iowa House of Representatives for the majority caucus staff. I was a research analyst there where I got to cover things like state government issues, commerce, economic development, things like that. So got to cut my teeth on the inside, if you will, before I went to the dark side. I am an attorney by trade. I went to Drake University Law School. I'm an University of Iowa undergrad, and that's just a little bit about me.
Yeah. Hi, everybody. I'm Courtney Craig. I'm just wrapping up my third year here at LS2 Group. Before that, I was out in D.C. where I was a legislative assistant for Congressman Feenstra, where I handled his ag, energy, and trade portfolio. So I had a really good time there. Before that, I actually worked on his campaign against J.D. Shulton. Before that, I was Brittany Lumley's intern at LS2 Group. And before that, I spent some time on state-level campaigns and working for various lobbyists at the Iowa Capitol. I am a product of Simpson College, so Roll Storm. Had a good time there. And I'm originally from Winterset, Iowa, where I grew up on a boar goat farm. So that's kind of where I cut my teeth in the farm world and grew up on a farm girl there in Madison County. So,
who are your other lobbyists?
So I should say the whole government affairs practice is overseen by Jeff Boink. He has been in Republican politics for quite some time and been in the lobby world for a very long time, has a lot of experience. And then, like I mentioned, Elliot Meyer, he is our Democrat lobbyist, and he also went to
Simpson.
Yeah.
Another Simpson grad. You meet one, you meet a thousand. And he has been involved with grassroots organizations and things like that.
So the like the crisis team and the event planning, how mm-hmm. big of a part of this enterprise is that?
It depends. Obviously, if there's a crisis, that's we're around. So it definitely takes up a lot of bandwidth. Messaging is important too with clients, even if you don't consider it a crisis, but kind of avoiding a crisis. Sure. You know, you want to make sure that you're messaging things correctly, and our team helps with that.
Are there some recent things that have been in the news that we would recognize?
That's
that
a really good question. I know that it's been a while, but gosh, what year was this? I was on staff, so it's been about a decade down in the things down in Ferguson, Missouri.
Okay.
If you can remember that. Yeah. I know that we were involved in those conversations. And then a lot of times you won't know that our firm has worked with somebody because, again, the messaging to avoid a crisis is just as important as the reaction to it.
Yeah. Well, you brought that part up, and that kind of fascinated me.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's something. I didn't think of crisis communication until I saw the TV show Scandal and how that was all, you know, Olivia Pope, that's how I learned about it. And we were fixers.
Well, really got me thinking about it here is like this most recent development with the superintendent in
yep.
Illinois.
Yes. Yep.
So mm-hmm. you guys may or may not have handled
no.
that.
No, that is
like a pretty serious crisis management.
Yeah. Yes.
And I do not believe we are involved in that. Okay. But that is a very
good
very
point.
Good point
yes.
because somebody should be, I will say. I think they're going to need some help with marketing and messaging, but that is just me saying that.
You guys might still get some phone calls on this episode.
That's yeah. right. There yeah. you go.
I found it interesting that their bond issues all passed, even with all that going on.
Yeah, the election stuff was super interesting to see which ones passed and which ones didn't.
Well, and it passed with a healthy majority. Wasn't it in yeah. the 70, like 73, 75%, yeah. which we have another colleague of ours that he's very involved in Des Moines Public Schools. Mm-hmm. His kids went to Des Moines Public. He was really frustrated during COVID how they handled things. So he's kept his thumb on the pulse, really. And he had thought it would get maybe 40%. Yeah. And the fact that it passed is
I'm
insane.
Assuming this bond stuff was probably more infrastructure related or, mm-hmm. yeah. So yeah. I kind of see why they had the support probably.
Yeah. And I know the messaging was if we don't get this passed, then they're going to have to close schools and cut staff. And that I believe that was kind of the tactic. Right. So when you're talking to people who have kids in school, I mean, that's compelling. Yeah. So
I don't want to turn this whole show into Des Moines. And I don't know.
Yes, I know.
I don't know enough about Des Moines Public Schools to say too much, but mm-hmm. on the radio, all this was all going on one of the radio shows I listen to occasionally. I think they said that Des Moines Public Schools has 6 employees for every student.
I believe
oh,
that.
Wow, really?
I believe that it is a massive organization.
Yes.
And
so.
their budget.
Their budget, yeah.
Their budget okay. was nearly, well, not as 2/3 or more of what the whole city of Des Moines budget is.
I believe that. Yeah.
So I'm shocked that these things passed.
Yeah.
Because obviously if you have 6 employees for every student, there's a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I absolutely agree with that. I mean, you look at our rural schools and you know, the student to staff ratio there and we're doing just fine. So we're producing good products.
Back the one room schoolhouse.
That's right. That's right.
Well, and that Des Moines, I know you don't want to talk all about Des Moines, but that drives a lot of the policy at the mm-hmm. Capitol because mm-hmm. that's, you hear about these large school districts that gets legislators.
Well, we have that right here in Cedar Rapids.
Of course. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You'd know her anyway, but Congresswoman Ashley Hinton.
Yes, yep.
She gets involved. Her kids go to Linmar.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And we're an ag policy show, so we're
yes.
But if you send your kids to the big school, maybe they're not getting what you think mm-hmm. maybe they should
Absolutely.
Be. And I think it should be the parents' decision.
Absolutely, yeah. Parental choices.
And I know a couple of our surrounding schools near Linmar have tremendous open enrollment to them.
Yeah, I believe it. Mm-hmm.
Well, let's try to rein it back into.
Yes.
But if you guys can kind of simply describe, in the government affairs aspect, how this ties back into agriculture and what your guys' role is with the lobbying organization with ag.
Yeah. Courtney, I'll let you start with
that. Yeah, absolutely. I think to start with, I think you have this idea of lobbying, right? Everyone thinks that lobbyists are like these big corporate interests and only billionaires have lobbyists and everyone's bought and paid for. But the reality is like a lot of producers and producing associations have lobbyists because they ensure voices are heard, right? The right to lobby the government's in the First Amendment. I like to remind people of that. We're the same as freedom of the press. Mm-hmm. So ensuring that producers have a voice, especially in a state like Iowa where the ag economy is so big and there's so many different sectors of the ag economy, is where lobbyists like Brittany and I come in, whether you're talking about like future markets in the ag economy, or you're talking about Iowa corn, or you're talking about the Farm Bureau or the soybean, all these sectors of society that bills influence and bills change and everything they regulate, they need a voice at the table, and producers need to be planting and harvesting and taking care of animals. And so ensuring that they have a voice there is what lobbyists do, right? Like they are the voice for the producers. And so I think, you know, it's just starting off the show by saying that lobbyists are not always a part of the swamp. Yes. It's super important. Right. Brittany and I are normal Iowans who want to represent agriculture and just a different society than and sector than just in the field. And so I think that's how lobbyists kind of help in the ag economy, especially at the Iowa Capitol, where ag economy is so important and talked about every day.
So we had a guest on about a month ago, Adam Chappell. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize it, but the ag lobby is the number two lobby behind pharmaceuticals.
I believe that. Yeah. Pharmaceuticals.
Well, when you think about like medical, like mRNA and all that stuff, right, with like hog vaccines and all that, or
no, I mean like the dollar spent.
Oh, lobby. How much spent?
This is
yes,
a huge lobby. It's number two.
Yes,
I believe.
Yes,
that,
yeah. I thought you meant like the part of pharmaceuticals. Yeah. I'm like, oh, I don't know if they lobby an agent.
Well, I will say we have some pharmaceutical clients, so that's why I was like, yeah, actually, like they very much,
yeah.
That was an interesting statement.
That would be the number one lobby in the country, and ag is number two.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I did not know that.
1,000%. I mean, when you look at, you know, everything that ag really touches, mm-hmm. whether it's, you know, what's in grocery stores, right? Or how it gets to grocery stores, or what the FDA is approving. Like, there's so much more to agriculture than just corn and soybeans. And I think a lot of times people are like, you know what, I just go to my store and I buy my food and I go home without the realization of how much it took to get that food to the store, whether it's on truck or train or, you know, ensuring that it's vaccinated, it's not going to get you sick. Like the ag lobby is an extremely powerhouse, not only in Iowa, but in D.C.
Yeah, and we think food here with our ag.
Yeah.
Like you get to other places and it's fiber and it's, you know.
Yes.
It's wood.
Oh, yeah.
It's mm-hmm. way bigger than what we kind of think about when we think ag here in Iowa.
Oh, for sure. And the business of agriculture as well. So coming, like we mm-hmm. mentioned, Courtney, obviously much more ag driven than I am. I have a lot more commerce and business clients, but like insurance, how that plays into the cost of everything. Mm-hmm. And that's, so it makes sense. And you don't realize just how much
energy.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
It's everything. Tentacles reach everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely.
You just mentioned the mother commerce, though, and most all commerce in Iowa, when you break it down, is ag related somewhere.
100%.
Ag is related to it.
Yeah.
Somewhere. I mean, I know the local person in Des Moines maybe doesn't think much what goes out on the farm.
Exactly right.
But chances are, if you live and work in Iowa, what's going on at the farm is affecting you, even if you.
Exactly
don't
right.
It.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, 100% agree.
And you hit one thing, you know, and I've said this all on inflation. Was driven so bad during the Biden administration. He pumped so much money into the
for
economy
sure.
that everything just went up. But mm-hmm. but over that, I don't know which one of you said it, but everything is trucked mm-hmm. in this country several times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And as he went on his green energy tyrant, it just drove them costs skyrocketing, which drove everything that you get off of a truck up, and that's how you get inflation.
Exactly right.
Mm-hmm. And we're definitely, you know, we're Iowa, we're state level, but watching what happens in other states too, what they're doing in California with just the ag policies and then back to trucking, we're going to require no more gas trucks. It's all going to be electric trucks and how that plays into, I mean, it's way more, there's a lot to it.
Yeah, when it's negative 40 in Iowa, let's see how long those batteries last, but we'll see.
Yeah, I guess I'd invest in copper wire because you're going to need an extension cord.
That's right.
So what are some of the things that you guys have worked on recently in the last couple of years with the lobby? And have you gotten into some of these energy policies or anything with?
Absolutely. I will say, taking it out of energy, though, I do want to highlight a client that we worked on, and it was a rules play, if you will, because I think a lot of people, or I know a lot of people, think of legislation and laws and bills that are passed. But a big part of lobbying deals with administrative rules. So a lot of times legislators will pass a bill, which we'll call the bones, and then it goes through the administrative rules process, which that's you put the meat on the bones because they're closer to the industry. They can make changes a little bit quicker. But it was outside of the energy policy, but it was ag-related. We worked for a company that dealt with chicken litter. And they wanted to produce, or they were producing organic chicken litter. And it was important for those organic farmers that it maintained that same classification. However, they dried it. And so it was a little bit, it was the way that the rules were drafted. If it was at all like the drying was speeded up or sped up at all, then that could be taking them out of the organic side of things. So we were able to work with the Department of Ag or Department of Ag and Land Stewardship, IDALS.
Is this like an OMRI type certification thing?
Or it was, I don't know exactly what the type of certification, they wanted to be considered certified organic. And it was important that producers that or chicken farmers, you know, used it, that they could maintain that from what I understood.
But there's something in our law that defines that process exempted it from meeting them qualifications.
Correctly. And it was because they dried it faster.
Okay.
And so we had to go in and, you know, that conversation, I always tell people, it's like, you don't understand, like when you're dealing with manure and how that deals with fertilizer and things like that. I mean, you all know that can get really contentious.
So like they were probably using a petroleum type product to dry something organic.
They were wanting to make sure that that was not going to be the case.
Sure.
So we worked with the Department of Ag and Secretary Nag and his team. And we worked with the legislators on the Rules Committee because there is some legislative oversight to explain exactly what we were trying to do. And they actually sailed through. Nobody had any issues. And honestly, if you're not in the industry, if you're not in the process, you had no idea that this happened. But it was something that it was the minefield. You don't know when you get into those chapters of code, it can be very dicey. So that was something we were really excited to get past. It's been a couple of years now, and there hasn't been any incidents that I'm aware of. So that was the chicken litter.
Keep on your organic eggs. Yeah. It's Brittany Lumley here,
exactly.
Folks.
Yeah. So that's one thing I wanted to highlight for sure. Yeah. And then in terms of energy and other policies, we have energy clients. We're in the thick of the energy discussion. Yep. There's a very contentious bill going through the legislature. And honestly, it harkens back to your tenure with ROFR and things like that.
I think we have, it's really interesting in the energy field, a lot of new markets, whether you're looking at hydrogen or whether you're looking at stuff to regulate the energy utilities or anything like that. I think last year was a really big energy year in Iowa. It'll be interesting to see in the upcoming session if there's energy fatigue, if people are like, I never wanted to hear the word energy again. You know, there are some people out there who just want to come into their room and turn on a light switch and have it come on. And I think that kind of ties back to, producers and farmers and Iowans. They don't understand everything that goes in to be able to flip a switch and having a light come on, right? So seeing if that's going to be a priority in the upcoming session is going to be really interesting, seeing what type of principles get to matter. And, we see new stakeholders like Americans for Prosperity and, like other groups coming in, and we didn't realize, these people have an interest in energy policy. And I think that's a really good point on having a lobbyist and how it's not just these giant organizations, right? It can be a nonprofit. It can be just someone that's decided they want to have a part in it. Like a lobbyist is really, truly a constituent who is passionate about some sort of project. Like you don't have to be a lawyer to be a lobbyist. And I think that's a really great part in Iowa because we are a part-time legislature that we allow, everyone to come up. We let constituents come up, whether you're a registered lobbyist or not, ensure that your voice is heard in the subcommittee process and you have the right to lobby your legislators. Iowa legislators don't get offices. They're on the floor. You send in that note and you got to track them down. I'm sure you know, Representative. They're in that gallery looking down. Yeah. Like, I see you.
I was fortunate enough to be in leadership.
There you go. Okay. So you could hide in your office for those votes,
Never hid my, no, I don't.
Okay.
Not votes, no.
I didn't hide for any vote, and I never hid from any. We've talked about stories before.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get into all of them. No, you can vouch for me. Even if you're against me, I can listen to you.
Absolutely.
We're going to agree. And I lived in a fairly... It was a red district, but it wasn't ruby red.
Yeah.
And when I'd go around and we'd have our area meetings.
Yeah.
And I held quite a few. And I'd go down to the southeast corner of my district, which is Mount Vernon area.
Okay.
In eastern Iowa there. And it was very, very blue.
Yeah.
And it usually had to start with the geography yeah. lesson.
Yeah.
Because I just basically show them the district.
Yeah.
You guys believe in this, but the majority of your district that you live in doesn't.
Nope.
And I represent the whole district.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, and I'd like to think I voted for things I didn't like. And I voted against things
I didn't absolutely.
Like mm-hmm. because I tried to represent the people. But
yeah. Well, I think that's just a really good point on how, you know, Iowa lobbyists and Iowa politics should work. And Iowa legislators is the transparency, right? We say this all the time. Like, we like legislators who tell us no as much as we like legislators who tell us yes. Like, as long as you're being real on your answer, we're pleased.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that transparency part of politics is so, so important in this day and age. So
I've got to think, too, that, like, Iowa, we're more alike than we are different.
Oh, 1,000.
Oh, yeah.
Other. So when you guys interact with other people from other states, do you guys feel like that's – we're pretty lucky here that we can get along this good, or do you think there's still a lot of contention here?
Yeah, I think so. And I chat with lobbyists from many other states. That's just how we figure out how things get done too. Mm-hmm. And I will say it's very interesting. I tend to gravitate towards the other red states because I'm like, what are the challenges you're seeing? Yeah. What are the things like that? And they just hearing about the level of staff involvement in other states. In Iowa, there's caucus staff for the entire caucus, but in other states, it's maybe you have a staffer for each legislator.
Oh, wow.
And having, you know, people having offices and whatnot, we are very lucky in Iowa to have the access that we do to legislators. You know, Courtney mentioned they're part-time. We have a part-time legislature, and we also have a citizen legislature. Mm-hmm. So people are not as well-versed on all the issues. You know, you've got farmers, and they're learning about banking issues and energy issues and the more nuanced side of things. And then you've got bankers who are learning about farming issues. And the level of access that we have in Iowa as lobbyists and even just as citizens of Iowa, it's insane. So, yeah, it is definitely something people's heads explode when they're like, wait, you can call these people and they answer. What do you mean you can have a coffee with them? And, you know, the committee chair or even leadership. We are in a very, very lucky
position. I think – I'm glad you brought that up because, like, even myself, it just seems like that – That's on another level that I can't get there. But it's really not that hard. You just got to pick up the phone and do it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, and I think that legislators prefer to hear from their constituents more than Brittany and I. They're like, oh, here's Courtney for the fifth time in this month, right? And ensuring that, you know, they know that how it impacts their district and they ensure that their constituents are part of it. I think a lot of time legislators are like, well, do you have someone from my district at this reception I can talk to, right?
And I think you're even seeing that at the, you know, at the Trump level.
Yeah.
Where, you know, Trump has really granted a lot of access to individuals and, you know, on the associations that we work with, a lot of these people, they don't want to hear from the lobbyists. They don't want to hear from the association representatives. They want to talk to the members and the constituents.
Well, and I think you see that when President Trump opened up his media room to, like, TikTokers and influencers, right? And, like, the younger generation, you know, I don't watch, like, cable news, in any cable news. I'm like, oh, but I'll scroll on social media and look at an influencer and how they view things. And so allowing them into the room and President Trump doing podcasts on the campaign side, right, it kind of changed the entire narrative on how we access, as Americans, you know, our politicians. So I think Iowa, you know, is a leader in that. Sure. So.
So on the energy side, just fill me in one more time. Who are you lobbying for on the energy side?
We have a couple of different clients on the energy side. We do represent Alliant Energy.
Okay.
We have a hydrogen exploration company called Coloma. And I know we have... Is that it? I'm thinking of the utilities.
We have utilities. We have, like, American Water is a water utility. Sure. So, you know, define energy, I guess, like electricity or.
Well, one thing that might come up this year. And so I left the legislature and became a county supervisor.
Okay. Yes.
Yes.
Another thing I tried to do when I was there was keep the Duane Arnold power plant on.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
There was no reason to close it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Other than NextEra didn't want to keep it open.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And that's a whole 2 hours showing.
Yes.
But now we have a solar farm that Alliant Energy owns.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Built by the American taxpayer, built by NextEra Energy with American taxpayer credits, then turned around and sold to Alliant, which is guaranteed 9% profit every year. Mm-hmm. So I'll quit picking on you here in just a minute, which they found out then that they can't produce enough energy to supply the data centers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So now all of a sudden, we're going to, maybe we should reopen Duane Arnold, which I'm actually fine with them reopening Duane Arnold. Mm-hmm. I wish they'd just admit that they should never closed it.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, here's the real one for me. Oh, by the way, we also need a gas-powered power plant because we still can't produce enough energy.
Mm-hmm.
But my my bone that I'd have to pick with, and Mike's a friend of mine, Mike Lemish, okay. He's the new
majority leader. Yep.
Majority leader. Mm-hmm. And he wrote a bill last year, didn't go anywhere, wanting to take county control, because we had control over that, mm-hmm. and come up with state control. And okay. So my question for you is, and I already have a preconceived answer, but I am known to change my mind on here. You asked Representative Norlin Munson. He actually convinced me of other beliefs after the show.
Okay.
Not on this topic.
Yeah.
But just to be.
Yes.
He wrote a bill that took that away from the counties and made state law, which on one hand, if it was a good state law, that might be okay. I mean, I understand, but my real point is the next heirs of the world didn't want that when they thought they could roll right over all the counties.
Mm-hmm,
and they rolled right over Linn County.
Mm-hmm.
Once they got, we only have three supervisors. When they needed me, they were willing to do some things. But mm-hmm. once they knew the unions got behind it and the other two supervisors were a yes, then, yeah, they just rolled over.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing I don't like about the solar was somebody's private property rights are trumping somebody else's.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I got rights as a landowner. I got rights as a house owner out there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so when it comes down to it, if that comes back up, will you be lobbying for state rights?
Are you talking about like siting and setbacks?
Yes.
And I think that is something from Alliance perspective. We need to see what the package looks like, right?
Exactly.
So I think that is something that, you know, we have, like we've mentioned, there are other bills that are out there that are certainly going to take up more. Option. They're going to take precedence because they affect us more.
Yep.
But that does come up quite a bit. And I know that Senator Zumbaugh has also expressed interest in this as well.
Yep.
But I mean, property rights in general, they will always be like that's a hot topic these days. But what are property rights exactly? Like, is it, you know, we're all about what we can do on our land, but then are we telling other people what they can do on theirs? And it's trying to find that fine line. That we'll have to just, I guess I will come back and say, we'll see.
Sure. Mm-hmm. That's a great answer.
Yeah.
I'm in the same boat. I mean, I like the county being able to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't agree with what happened in Linn County. I voted no.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, you see what the legislation actually is and then mm-hmm. go from there. My only fear is it'll be too late at that point.
Mm. Yeah. Well, and this has been something, and you know as well as we do, again, we love the Iowa legislature. It's not a fast process. And it's certainly if something comes up in May and then you've got to wait until January for something to come up, you know, to actually address it, which hopefully there are ways around it. We don't always just want to pass laws. And that's even from our client's perspective. It's like, can we be creative about this?
Yeah.
But the legislature does not move quickly. And there's been so many different iterations. Like, who knows what's going to be.
Sure.
What's going to be the new thing, too, that you're going to have to address with local control and taking it from the state or what have you. So.
One thing you guys were talking about, how Iowa's the people have a lot more in common.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that too at one time, but actually that was one of the first things I got to realize when I got to the state house
mm-hmm.
was Iowa's about like the country.
Mm-hmm.
And I-35 divides it.
Mm-hmm.
It's far more right.
Oh, yeah.
West of I-35
yeah.
is to the east.
Yeah, I do think that's true. Yep.
But that left and right, or whatever you want to call it, that divide is really divided by the metropolitan areas, right?
I was going to say, it's almost so Des Moines versus rural, Des Moines Republicans, rural Republicans. I think it's super fascinating to see what happens. But I also think that at the end of the day, like, you will see Democrats and Republicans sitting down and having coffee in the morning in the basement of the cafeteria.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they are working across the aisle more and more. And I don't know if that always gets advertised, but I think at the end of the day, you know, whether it's a Democrat or Republican legislator, they are there because they feel a call to be a public servant. And they feel like they are doing the best for their district. Whether or not Brittany and I agree with people from the other party, we do know that they're there because they want to represent, you know, their constituents the best of their abilities. Whether or not we think that is actually going to help them or not, we won't say. We work with everyone, but I do think there is a drive there to, you know, call to better Iowa in the sense of however they want to.
So that betterment of Iowa, and, you know, from your guys's perspective, you know, mm-hmm. Getting the constituents of Iowa or the voters of mm-hmm. Iowa to become more involved.
Yeah.
We talked a little bit about that access.
Yeah.
How can they be better working with organizations like you guys to mm-hmm. to align, or, you know, how can you guys directly interact with the constituents to help them even.
Yeah, for sure. I will start off with a shameless plug again. We're great lobbyists. We're really good at what we do. And you can always, we're always looking for new clients. So with that, but to be honest though, outside of that, going on social media, I know I'm not the best on social media, but going and seeing what your local legislators, like, are they having coffees? Are there forums you can attend? That is something I think is really important. And I encourage people to reach out to their legislators. Absolutely. And grab a cup of coffee, because what they do affects you. And in Iowa, our state government and our state budget and everything is generally in a good place. And so you want to know the people who are making these decisions. And then when there is an issue, you have a relationship established. So then you can call them when there's something that you don't like and be like, hey, what are you doing here? And keeping that relationship. And they want to talk to you because you're a voter, you're a potential donor. And so it's something that I encourage people to keep that door open.
Well, I think even going back to the very beginning of it, right? If someone declares their candidacy, whether it's in a primary or a general, like go be like, why should I vote for you, right? Why should I door knock for you? And I think people forget about that grassroots engagement so often. And whether it's the county supervisor or the legislators at the state level, like ensuring that they're in door knocking and promoting the values that you want to see in office, I think is so, so important. And, you know, I think everyone in politics is like, oh, vote, it's your duty. But like, seriously, go vote. Mm-hmm. Like, go make your voice heard at the ballot, right? And then if you disagree, at least you can say, I didn't vote for you, but maybe you can change my mind. Mm-hmm. And grabbing that coffee. And I think people forget, like, you can go meet candidates. It doesn't just have to be an elected official, right? Or you can recruit someone to run for office and ensure that your values are there. Like, there's so many different opportunities, especially in Iowa, which is why we're first in the nation. Is because we have that access, and people do want to be involved, I think, in Iowa. They truly do.
And outside of that, we've talked about this too. Associations.
Oh yeah.
Associations are huge. Mm-hmm. And like with anything, you get what you get out what you put in. So be active in associations. There's a ton of ag-focused associations. I mean, we know that Farm Bureau, corn, soybean, cattlemen, pork, like there's always associations to Absolutely. Join. And to engage. We don't represent those clients, but I do represent some other associations. And I always want people to give me feedback because they're the experts. And that is also a way to make your voice heard. And that I think that's very, it's very important.
It's member driven.
Yep. Absolutely.
That's been my biggest frustration as a director for the corn growers is that when I talk to my members, you know, their frustrations, they feel like they're not getting voiced.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're not coming to the round and they're not coming to the grassroots summits, and they're not voicing their concerns.
Absolutely.
So it's like these constituents here, how do we get them back in the driver's seats of being good stewards of government?
Yeah.
I will say, and I don't know, and I know your association is, the corn growers are very successful.
Oh, yeah.
And it's because you have a great lobby team, right? I brag about our associations too. I'm like, people only start paying attention when the ball starts getting dropped. And it's like, we can't get complacent. So I just think, again, reaching out, it's a lot of it is going to be from the top down on that issue. Just making sure that people understand, hey, this is what could happen if you don't stay engaged. We don't want to be complacent.
I want to ask, because I think this is a great time to bring it up. You know, I struggle with the old, the postcards and the newsletters. Mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm. How are we engaging with people? What do you guys see being the best way to squeeze the juice out of this thing to interact with the people?
Yeah.
What are your guys' most
honestly, success? I think our big thing, and lobbyists hate doing them, but they're needed, is like bill trackers, right? And I think members seeing how many bills are actually there that might impact you is like, oh, crap. Like, I actually have to get involved because, you know, a client might have one priority and they're like, this is the only thing we care about in session, but there might be literally 30 bills introduced that might affect you. And ensuring that members know all the issues that are there, that your association is putting out fires for them while they don't, I think that drives member engagement because it's like, oh, shoot, I can call Brittany now because there's on page 4 of my bill tracker, there's something that matters and now I want to get involved. And I think it pays dividends, even though it is extremely time consuming. Pay your lobbyists well because a lot goes into it. But I think ensuring that members have the knowledge has been really successful for us. Brittany's an executive director of association. She can talk more about it, but I think on the lobby side.
And also, again, and we go back to meeting with legislators, right? And having your constituents meet with legislators. That is one thing that I try to do with our associations is arrange those meetings and have, you know, whether it's a coffee with, you know, we're going to talk insurance. And so we'll have the commerce chair. And that, I think, is really helpful because then people can see exactly, first of all, how dialed in your association is. And it gives you the face time. And so that's something that we try to do because again, as long as things are going great, they don't have an issue. It's when things start going downhill. And that's, we try to stay ahead of that. And you don't ever want to be like, the sky is falling, but complacency is it's a problem. We're going to see it in the election next year too, with the midterms. So it's just trying to make sure by adding those types of services, that's the most important.
I was just going to say that. So when things are good, people don't care who their
player
is, and they don't pay any attention until something's not quite right with what's going on.
Absolutely.
Whether it's the price of beans, if you want to go to agriculture, and all of a sudden squeaky wheel gets greased. But I would say one thing you said that I disagree with a little bit, I always found it frustrating, not frustrating, because I always like talking to my clients, and I'm also on the Iowa Corn Board now.
Yeah.
I don't need to go talk to the Norlin Munson. I know they're already
solid.
Aware,
yeah, they're good.
Know what's going on with Iowa corn. You really need to go to the other side of the aisle.
Yeah.
And they probably oftentimes don't know anything about it or very little.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's hard to do it's not hard for me to do. It's probably not hard for Elliot,
Absolutely. Like someone who has their values and like you believe one thing. And I definitely think that, you know, LSU prioritized this. We're a bipartisan firm, right?
Sure.
Because you do have to talk to everyone. And sometimes that means it is more education than advocacy, because you have to sit down and be like, well, this is when corn is planted. Like, you know, like look around. And so sometimes it is a little bit more than that. And sometimes it is telling them like, you're just simply wrong on this. You know, like it's not just like a feeling that this is a fact. And sometimes those are harder conversations. But I think to Elliot's point in driving members, like sometimes you have to tell them, we had a really tough conversation for you, by the way. And sometimes the harder conversations is what brings members to the table, because they're like, oh, not everyone just thinks like I think. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes you need to put somewhere up there to kind of be slaughtered, because you have to be like, look, this person disagrees with us and you need to know that. Mm-hmm. So,
well, with that, this leads me right into this question is, you know, what one egg policy topic do you think you wish farmers understood more?
We've talked about this a lot. So it's not necessarily like one, I guess, not a topic, but we want producers to understand that they have a seat at the table, but we want them also to be open to some of these new emerging technologies, if you will. Yeah. We represent a hydrogen company, and just understanding like we're coming in to the state of Iowa, we want to work with you. It's not a way to get anybody out of the, you know, we're not trying to do anything that like pulls a fast one. And there's a seat at the table for both of us. And while we respect your expertise in the ag economy the ag industry, we also would like you to respect ours on this issue. And let's try and find a way to work together. That is something I think with economic development and some of those emerging technologies that we want to make sure that you don't feel like you're being run over, if you will. And
with this energies that are coming on, you know, the hydrogen thing, these resources that exist here in the state, are you seeing a conversation come about with how do we give residents residents of Iowa a better standing when it comes to the earnings of these resources? You know, no different. I had a conversation here in the last couple of weeks about like deer tags, tags, you know, those tags, that wildlife resource is something that's looked at and given preferential treatment to Iowa residents.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is there any conversation around that happening with these energy resources?
Gosh, that's a good question. I think that there's a ton of different ideas that are being proposed, whether or not at the residential side of things, but maybe if it's, you know, these new data centers and things like that. I cannot speak specifically to that. I don't know if you have any background.
No, I would say, not to dodge the question, I will come back to it, I promise. But I think to Brittany's point, I think what we feel like people in the ag sphere and producers and farmers need to know is like not every new idea is the Green New Deal, right?
Oh,
like just because didn't exist a couple of years ago doesn't mean it's a hoax. And I think that's something that we spend a lot of time advocacy and stuff like that. And I know, you know, my dad's a farmer. He hates change. I think farmers like, this is the formula that works on my field. This is what's always going to work on my field. I am never changing this. And it's like, dad, but we probably could. Like, I promise it's okay. And so encouraging farmers that change is okay sometimes, and new markets aren't necessarily hoax. Mm. I think it's really important. But Elliot, to your point on encouraging folks and ensuring that Iowans are part of the discussion when it comes to like having incentives go to them, I think that's super interesting, because especially when it comes to new markets and data centers or hydrogen, it deals with who owns the land, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's why, you know, Brittany and I were really excited when Governor Reynolds ensured that foreign land ownership didn't happen in Iowa. And like some more of those bills are passed to ensure that, you know, the Iowans who own the land are the Iowans we are talking to is super mm-hmm. important, because, you know, going back to your earlier comments about the IUB or the IUC, whatever you want to call them these days, you know, we have to talk to the landowner, and whether that's the person farming the land or not, we can't control that.
I want to make sure everybody knows this, because it's probably one of my biggest pet peeves, is that there's this, all this talk about foreign ownership.
You're talking about the JBS, all that. Mm-hmm. They still own the land.
You realize, though, that it's been illegal in Iowa to own.
Oh, yeah.
It's like 1983.
Yeah, it was like 19 states had that. We were one of it. Like when I was in D.C.,
yeah,
this was a big thing
just
in 2000.
Like going around like they just cured cancer.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, oh, we've had this.
Yeah, we were one of 19 states to do it years ago.
Well, that's the way lots of things are. I know when we did a lot of gun bills when I was
oh, yes, yep.
And I can't tell you how many people didn't realize that Iowa has always, since it became a state, been open carry.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You could walk around with your six gun mm-hmm. on your side
right.
anytime mm-hmm. you wanted. So I never quite understood mm-hmm. why people were such in arms that somebody could carry a
Some
gun.
Some lobbyist out there was able to get paid saying it wasn't.
Yeah.
So.
yeah.
I remember Speaker Paulson at the time. He goes, I always, whenever I walk into a room, I imagine that citizens are exercising their Second Amendment right to carry. And I was like, holy smokes. See, yeah, I had never thought of it, but of course, I just didn't realize it wasn't. And to your point.
Sure. I just always sat by Representative Balder.
Yeah.
Clow, he'll take care of you.
Oh, yes, he will. Yes, he will.
Anyway.
You did a good job answering the energy question there, mm-hmm. and I think that's something that you're right.
Yeah.
Farmers, we need to be better stewards of this, and we need to understand mm-hmm. what's coming up in the future. And I think we're probably bumping up close on time. And
well, we are. So
you guys will stick around.
We'd yeah,
do
no, absolutely.
Guys.
We have time,
yes, for sure.
And we'll try to get into maybe what's coming up in this upcoming legislative session on what we should be focused on just to that point.
Yeah,
that's
sure.
a great idea. And if you're listening to Rush Ag, we sure appreciate you tuning in. Tell your friends and neighbors about it. And we'll see you next week in the next hour, Rush Hour Ag. Thank you.
Thanks, listeners.